Thank you so much. And it's our pleasure to be here today to discuss all things Project Acacia. Now, you probably know a little bit about it, but might be worth starting with just a couple of high-level comments. There were 57 industry participants, 20 use cases, and all sorts of money that were considered and experimented with. This was an incredibly broad-ranging examination of not just central bank digital currencies, but digital currency more broadly, and the role for wholesale markets. It's not just money, it's what we use money for. And as we've heard today, everything to do with financial innovation, and particularly tokenization and payments, are core to that financial innovation strategy. Brad, that wasn't the only announcement today. There was also a really exciting announcement from the RBA about some of what we're going to see post-Acacia, building on some of those 10 initiatives that were in the report. In a little bit, we'll get into that, but I'd love for you to give a bit of background as to what was the motivation for Project Acacia and perhaps some of those sort of key findings that came out of it.
Thanks, Hannah. Good morning, everyone. Yeah, I think there was really three things sitting behind Project Acacia. One was a recognition that while our retail payment system in Australia, I would argue, has been a hotbed of competition dynamism, we just hadn't seen the same level of disruption and dynamism in our wholesale markets. So that was the first consideration. And so potentially we've been leaving some efficiency benefits on the table as a country. The second is that a growing recognition that capital is mobile in the 21st century, highly mobile, and if our markets are going to remain internationally competitive, then we've got to offer investors a seamless end-to-end experience. I would just note there that somewhere between 50 and 80% of our fixed income securities in Australia are held offshore. So very cognizant of that. And the third related element more generally, technological disruption of the sort that tokenization represents is almost certainly an inevitability. And so if it's going to happen, it's either going to happen to us, it will be imposed on us, or we be more proactive, we lean in and shape that disruption in the national interest. And so that's essentially why we set off on that journey. In terms of what we learnt, I'd say three or four things. Number one, the project revealed to us a strong and growing appetite from industry to explore how money and assets can move across our financial system in a more efficient and less risky way than is currently the case. So that was the first big learning. As you mentioned, we had 57 industry participants. That was a very broad church. We had some very large institutions and some very small institutions. To give you a sense, since that time, one of our more recent outreaches with industry, which I'll come back to in a moment, we've had more than 120 expressions of interest. So the point we take from there is the Australian community is leaning in and engaged in a way that maybe wasn't the case a few years ago. The second thing we learned at a more sort of concrete level, the hypothetical benefits around tokenization and the opportunities for innovation in wholesale markets that have been spoken about internationally, I think we're able to demonstrate those can be realised here in Australia. That's, you know, compressing the time between transactions and monetary settlement to reduce settlement risk, increasing the ability of collateral to move seamlessly through our system, taking layers of cost out of the intermediation process, taking manual errors out of our system. All of those sort of quite concrete benefits we showed are available to us. A third thing is there's some opportunities to uplift how our markets work that extend beyond tokenization or don't rely only on tokenization. I think we can sweat our existing infrastructure and payment rails harder than we do today, whether that's the MPP, whether that's RITs, better alignment of operational hours for core infrastructure with key global financial centres, greater transparency in funding markets. These are things that don't require tokenisation, but that paired with tokenisation, I think could be quite powerful. We also learnt that although the ultimate end state for tokenisation is probably a world where assets are issued in a digitally native form and where assets, where settlement occurs in tokenised money atomically, that's the end state, and tokenised assets and money are on the same ledger. There's some incremental steps that almost certainly industry will pursue before we get to that sort of that final end state. The last thing I'll just mention is for all of that promise, there's some big thorny challenges to how we do innovation in Australia, and it's really going to take a Team Australia effort to make the progress that we think is possible.
Yeah, it's certainly an area where collaboration is key, not just within industry participants. I think one of the benefits of Project Acacia is this came not just from the RBA, but also the DFCRC. And it's great having both of you up on stage to discuss how this is working. And perhaps tell us, when the RBA looks at this from a regulatory and a practical perspective, the DFCRC also looks at this from a research perspective. Obviously, you have a plethora of knowledge and insight. But what was new for you going through Project Acacia? And perhaps, I know you've done a bit of research on the quantification, I think 24 billion plus is the sum in terms of the benefits. Can you give us a bit of insight into that side of the work you've been doing too?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Hannah. The $24 billion that you referred to comes out of a substantial piece of economic research that we did during and in the lead up to Acacia, which had a look at what are the potential economic benefits of tokenization in Australia. And we looked across three main categories: making better markets, making better payments, and then making better asset issuance, servicing, and distribution channels. And we came to the estimate of $24 billion per annum is the annual kind of productivity unlock or economic gain that's on the table there if we can achieve tokenization at scale. And so with that sort of backdrop, and we went into Project Acacia, there were a few things that really stood out for us. One was the use cases that were run in Project Acacia, and they were largely run with real live transactions, real money, not just simulations. What they did was actually validated for us many of those mechanisms that underpin those estimates of $24 billion of national economic benefits. So we saw those types of things that Brad was referring to: compressed settlement cycles, capital being unlocked that was tied in transactions. We saw end-to-end automation of asset issuance and life cycle events. And that really gave us confidence that what we had been estimating, the $24 billion, is actually something that Australia can realise. If anything, we found some sort of evidence to suggest we may be a touch on the conservative side with those estimates. The second thing that stood out for us in Project Acacia was many of these kind of benefits of blockchain and distributed ledgers have been framed in very sort of hypothetical and sort of abstract ways that we could use blockchain for this or distributed ledgers for that. And what Project Acacia did was actually made it tangible. It moved from the hypothetical to practical implementations. And because those practical implementations were being done largely with real money and real assets on the line, the use cases had to go through the difficult process of all the legal considerations, the operational considerations, the governance and the risk management, et cetera. And a lot of rich lessons about how to actually implement this in practice came out of that. And that stays with the use cases and those who are able to observe those. We saw very pragmatic solutions of people sort of working around current constraints in the financial system infrastructure, synchronizing a settlement on a distributed ledger with a payment in the traditional rails, and various other things that indicate that, you know, despite the varying degrees of maturity in financial market infrastructure, where there's a will, there's a way, and we're able to move ahead with tokenization use cases. And perhaps the third thing was some of the truly cutting edge world first that was set in Project Acacia. From a research perspective, what was really novel was issuing pilot wholesale CBDC onto both public and private third-party ledgers for research purposes. And that was a very novel step that internationally caught a lot of attention. It exposed some of the benefits of having a truly composed atomic settlement on a distributed ledger where the assets and wholesale CBDCs sit in one ledger, but also exposed some of the dangers of not getting those platforms stitched together and perfectly interoperable because you can end up with a massive fragmentation of liquidity. So a lot of both positives and negatives came out of that learning.
So clearly there are some significant benefits that we found. What are some of the sort of issues and perhaps barriers to this wholesale market innovation taking off? Brad, what did you see from your perspective?
Yeah, so some of these pertain to tokenization specifically, but actually most of them are about innovation in the country more generally. I think the first issue is just the country has been crying out, I think, for mechanisms that more structured mechanisms to facilitate public-private collaboration. So in Acacia, we effectively had to manufacture a forum to bring all four agencies from the Council of Financial Regulators together in a room with the CRC and with 57 industry participants. We had to manufacture an architecture to make that work. It was not straightforward. And so I'm delighted about today's announcement and that Maha's review has now sparked, I'm sure will spark, a concerted effort to think more holistically about the architecture for stimulating innovation in this country. The second piece there would be, we hear back from industry that there's still some areas of legal or regulatory uncertainty that have held back innovation in different ways, and that's one of the reasons why the sandbox has been sort of front focused in our response to what we've learnt from Acacia. And then finally, there's a few more sort of technical elements. There's issues around, for instance, interoperability between new and existing forms of infrastructure. There's some technical issues that we still need to resolve. There's issues around, partly related, ensuring that we don't end up in a world where liquidity is just fragmented across multiple venues. And finally, there's still some questions around the scalability and resilience of some of these new frontier platforms. But I'm an optimist in the sense that I don't feel like any of those barriers are insurmountable at all. They might slow things down a bit and they require some careful thought, but I don't see them as being insurmountable at all.
Tell us, what's your view?
I agree wholeheartedly with what Brad mentioned there. I'd maybe just pick up on a few things. In Project Acacia, the way we were able to do the real money experimentation was with a broad regulatory relief instrument from ASIC. And the unfortunate thing is that the moment Project Acacia stopped, so did the use cases, which really does speak to the fact that one of the barriers that they were facing was the regulatory and licensing piece. And I don't want to debate here whether our framework is sufficiently flexible and principles-based, but certainly some of the principles that Maha articulates in her review, I think, are really excellent. They shine a light on what regulation is needed to promote innovation, and two of them absolutely welcome. The other thing that seems to be a very substantial constraint is, even if there were no regulatory barriers, adoption isn't a given. And adoption is stifled by a few things. One is, in the financial system, just in general, there's very strong network effects. And those network effects are particularly strong when it comes to tokenization and shifting from one record-keeping system, account-based record-keeping system, to another record-keeping system. So you end up with something that we refer to as a first mover disadvantage, where you might have a bunch of parties that can see the collective benefits if we all were to move across and modernize infrastructure, but we can't bridge that chasm because of the strong network effects. And so there's a few ways to go about dealing that with this challenge. One is to have a really tight integration of new infrastructure with existing systems so that it doesn't feel like a chasm, but rather it feels like financial system activity and that there's happened to be two systems in the back end that are recording transactions and holdings. And the other one that I think can jolt the sector out of being stuck in a particular equilibrium held there by network externalities is really credible anchor initiatives. And so there I'd maybe call out the government's support for exploring a tokenized government bond as potentially an anchor initiative that could rally a lot of use cases together around a particular part of the financial system and really get the critical mass that's required to overcome those network effects.
So in short, there's still work to be done, but some pretty exciting things along the horizon. Looking to that, obviously there were 10 initiatives that were announced as part of this post-Acacia roadmap, but in particular there are three this morning that the RBA has put out a press release on and given a bit more colour to. Brad, I'd love to hear your views about what these particular initiatives are and where they're heading.
Yeah, so this morning, about an hour ago actually, we released three things. First of all, our consultation with industry, which will run through to the end of October, on how our core settlement infrastructure at the RBA can be adapted to accommodate and facilitate the growth of a tokenized finance ecosystem in Australia. So we welcome all and any ideas. That what we learn from that consultation will first of all inform whether there are some things we can do in the near term at the bank to be supporting responsible innovation that could, for instance, find expression, say, in how we interact with the sandbox next year. Also, it could help inform our what we call our RITS modernisation strategy, which will be a very significant multi-year project where the bank is really going to fundamentally rethink what does our real-time gross settlement system of the future need to look like, and how can it make sure that it's got enough adaptability to support whatever innovation groups of people like those in this room think it is most going to advance the national interest. So that's really the main element from today's release. A couple of other elements, we have published a joint paper today with the Treasury updating our assessment of the case for a retail central bank digital currency. That report basically sets out what's been happening globally in this space, and the short story there is internationally there's been, I would say, generally a loss of momentum on the retail CBDC side and a go forward on the wholesale CBDC side. That is entirely consistent with the strategy that we've been pursuing at the bank, and so really a reaffirmation of where we are dedicating our resources at the RBA on the research side and in the experimental side. And finally, there is now a web page, a dedicated web page on the RBA website, where at any time, if industry want to know where are the 10 initiatives that we announced in the post-Acacia roadmap at, what's their purpose, what problems are they trying to solve, which agency is leading it, and where is it at, there'll be a one-stop shop, a single source of truth, where you'll be able to find that information. That information will be updated periodically. So that's what's come out this morning. Just a few weeks ago, we also opened up expressions of interest for two industry advisory groups, one related to tokenization in general, and another more specifically on the tokenization of bank deposits. I would say we've been inundated with interest. I mentioned before, in Acacia, we had 57 industry participants with us. Just on the tokenization advisory group alone, we've had more than 120 expressions of interest. So there's really been a step change there. And we've similarly been surprised at the interest on the deposit token working group. So those are initiatives that we announced as part of the post-Acacia roadmap. So we're giving expression to those. There's a few others that are also operating in the background where different agencies will lead. Treasury are examining the case for a tokenized government bond. We're also at the bank committing to conduct a review of our ESA access policy once the government's licensing reforms go through. And in addition to the sandbox that we've spoken a lot about, that we're working with the CRC and ASIC on scoping up. Cross-border payments is a very big focus for us. I don't think anyone in Australia should be satisfied with how money is moving around the world. It's a priority at the G20 level. It's a priority for the Payment System Board. And I hope to be able to say more about that in the not too distant future, but that's another key area of focus for us.
It's great to hear that this truly is a priority in relation to the advancement of our economy as a whole. Talis, where do you see the role for the DFCRC in this going forward?
We see the role of DFCRC as the connective tissue between three main stakeholder groups. One is industry on one hand, the other one is regulators and government, and then we've got the research community. And we see our role as bringing those three sectors together for the national benefit here. Our mandate is really a national economic benefit maximisation one. And so when it comes to the regulatory-led initiatives, we really look forward to supporting the agencies in the work on some of these key initiatives that Brad's mentioned. Our focus in playing that support role is to ensure two things happen concurrently. One is that these initiatives create commercially relevant opportunities for industry to innovate and to do so in a safe and responsible manner, and at the same time modernize financial market infrastructure. And the second core objective that we have is to generate evidence from this series of initiatives and bring the evidence to policymakers in a structured manner to underpin informed policymaking in Australia. And so that's how we see our role. There'll be some of these industry-led initiatives where we'll play a much more direct and active role. So, for example, the Australian Tokenization Advisory Group that Brad mentioned will help coordinate industry's views and input into that group, and as well as the more focused subgroups that'll sit underneath that, including Deposit Token Working Group, and there'll be scope for other focused working groups by industry on other topics as well.
So we're getting into the end state, and we're looking at not just Australia, but how does this interact with where we're going internationally? Brad, you've kind of hinted at this already, but where do you see Australia, and how has Acacia propelled us?
If I were to invoke a cycling analogy, I would say that prior to Acacia, a couple of years ago, we were at risk of slipping out of the lead peloton when it came to innovation in our wholesale markets. I think fast forward to today, and what we've been able to do is make sure the country is back in that lead peloton. I mentioned before the interest that we've received just to our latest expression of interest, but the other tangible markers that I see are the issues that we're discussing here are now being elevated at the most senior levels of the largest institutions in the country, which was not the case a couple of years ago. And when I travel internationally, I am very frequently asked about Acacia, what we learned, and where we're going next. So we have absolutely got the attention of the rest of the world here, and the rest of the world is basically wanting to learn from our experience now. And so the information's flowing in both directions, which is great. And it's opening up potentially, I hope, new opportunities for international collaboration, because this technology is not going to respect borders. So I think it's critically important that Australia has a seat at the international table as the new financial architecture is being bedded down. And I think we've got a very strong case in this country to have a seat at that table now. And of course, it's all being helped by the fact that our other public sector agencies who are represented here today, Treasury, we heard some announcements this morning from the Assistant Treasurer. Our close colleagues at ASIC have been doing a mountain of work here, and also APRA increasingly leaning in on issues related to the tokenization of commercial bank deposits, which is critical because we and I are very much on the public record. The two-tier monetary system, where you have central banks providing like the foundational layer of resilience and stability with commercial bank deposits sitting on top and private industry innovating on that core infrastructure, we think is very much going to roll into the next phase of financial innovation. So it's really important that banks are a part of that journey. So this is beyond any one institution to be able to keep this momentum up. But I sense now very strong levels of engagement right across the ecosystem to ensure that we can harness these opportunities in a way that is really in the national interest.
Thank you so much. I think we might be at time, so I just want to wrap up by saying it's pretty clear that this is an iterative process. We're moving not beyond Acacia, we're following in an evolution from it. It is something that is certainly inclusive. DFCRC and RBA, as well as the other regulators, the CFR, have made an incredible contribution working across the entire industry, and it's clear we'll continue to do so, perhaps not with 120 participants directly in the room, but certainly I'm sure we'll be involved in the future. And then ultimately, this is innovative. And it's not just innovative for pie-in-the-sky future, it's innovative for the next phase of our financial economy and our financial future here in Australia. Brad, Talis, thank you so much for sharing your insights here today. I think I speak for everyone that has been fascinating to hear your views about where we're at and where we're going.
Thank you, Hannah.